The Education Channel supports individual educational goals and encourages creativity for all. Visit uctv.tv/education.
Welcome to the Mi Camino series, where alumni share how their path to and through UC San Diego led them to their careers. Our guest today is Eduardo Colvera, who graduated from UC San Diego in 2012. From a tumultuous relationship with education to becoming an English professor and professional writer, Eduardo's journey is an inspiring example of how everyone has a story inside them. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So you and I were neighbors for a little bit, and that's how we got to know each other. And when I learned you were from UC San Diego, I really wanted to spend some time interviewing you because I think your story is the fascinating one and will be inspiring for our viewers and our listeners. So let's talk a little bit about, you're an English professor right now and a writer. And my first question for you is, how did this inspiration to become a writer start?
Oh my goodness. I wish I could say that I had some sort of choice in it. I think it's like a lot of things. Certain skill sets kind of present themselves to you and you don't really have a choice in the matter. So for me, what I should have been is a doctor. I should be a doctor right now somewhere performing some sort of surgery, specifically thyroid surgery, actually, because what happened when I was in high school earlier on was my dad was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And the process of his treatment, especially during that kind of earlier point in my education, motivated me to go down that path, down medical. And I had hopes and dreams up until the fact where I had to confront my inability to do most high-level mathematics. And so I think when that sort of happened, I kind of had this moment of inventory realization where you get these kind of chances to double down on some of your strengths. And one of my strengths at the time just happened to be English and writing. And walking down that path, I was very fortunate because of the encouragement that I got from my professors, that it took me in a way where I was able to kind of thrive in a way that I don't think that I would have had I gone down the medical field. So English for me really was this opportunity that opened every door that I wanted to walk through. And I consider myself very fortunate that I found my sort of pocket and I was able to build things around me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how this started, because I know you and I know that you have an interesting story about how you got exposed to reading and literature. So why don't you share that story?
So I'm the de facto black sheep of my family for the most part. I'm the oldest, so that's the first problem. I have a middle brother and I have a younger sister. And so within the family dynamic, I'm the one that's supposed to set the example, which I very much struggled to do. So I was constantly in trouble. My brother was an excellent student and my sister was very self-motivated. But myself, I just would not, I would refuse. And I still refuse to this day in many different respects, but being told what to do, doing your homework, paying attention in class, not being chatty, I couldn't do it. And so kind of that disruptive behavior that I had ended up with me being in trouble almost always. And that trouble took the form of very long periods of being grounded. And I think within that sort of disciplined style, my dad had sort of set out for me what he, I think, assumed was supposed to be the maximum amount of punishment that I could endure, which at the time was doing things I didn't want to do, which was my homework and reading and writing. So my punishment was I would have to sit at a table in the kitchen for close to 2 years, because that's how long the rebellious streak lasted. And I would have to read a book and I would have to write a report on it. And I did that daily for the entirety of my sixth grade year and seventh grade year. And through that sort of refusal to conform, my reading level went somewhere, I think it was a little bit below, maybe like fifth or sixth, to about 12th grade over the course of that 1 year. And then I don't know, because like anything, the more you do something, the better you get. And then the more you do it, the more you like it. I became more or less obsessed. And then from there, I preferred to be grounded. I preferred that.
You wanted a book to read, in other words.
Yeah, just more time, more space to read.
Yeah. Do you remember the first book your father told you to read?
Yes. So my dad assumed that Shakespeare was going to be the most difficult thing to read because I think that was some of his early experience. So one of the first things that I read was Hamlet, even though he didn't necessarily like it or had read it, but he knew enough to know that that was going to be painful for me to do. So Hamlet was one of the first. I know I was forced to read The Count of Monte Cristo, and I know there was a wild collection of Stephen King novels that he made me do. But it was just like things I should not have been reading, I believe, maybe at sixth grade or fifth grade, where I started being rambunctious. But he just assumed that the thicker it was, the more problems I would have, and that's punishment enough. And so that range of reading is what I was put through.
So you went to community, you were a transfer student into UC San Diego. And so prior to that, you were at community college. And throughout your adolescence, you were reading, and at some point it became something that you wanted to do and you enjoyed to do. Dad didn't have to sit you down anymore. And so I know that there was, when did you realize that you were a good writer and that writing brought you joy?
That's such an interesting way to phrase it, the way that you said that my dad didn't have to do it, because I remember when I was younger having these like long form conversations with him, specifically to do with the sports that we were doing, because I grew up playing tennis my whole life since I was before I could walk. There's pictures of me holding a tennis racket and I'm barefoot on the tennis court. And we always have these sort of discussions about motivation and like how, it's very difficult for you to become good at something unless you're very much self-motivated, and tennis specifically requires a lot of discipline and focus. And so, as I already mentioned, my motivation factor was always lacking in these certain things. And his biggest concern, I think, was just maybe me growing and the not finding that sort of drive or motivation to do certain activities or sports or disciplines or my even my field of focus, like work. And I think that was the big determining factor, was once I realized that writing was something that I could do as easy as I could breathe, and the reading seemed to sort of always support that. I didn't need anybody to tell me to do it. I just enjoyed doing it. And it's just this slippery slope that shoots upwards, where it's just like the more I did it, the better I got, the more I enjoyed it, the more I wanted to do it. And so I hopefully, if I'm answering your question correctly, I it read the moment where it really opened the door was when I was at community college. I'm at that sort of intersection where I'm at the borderline of potentially failing my chemistry class. I'm also simultaneously in an English class, and my professor gives us just this assignment to write a short story. It's like, go home, write a short story, come back, bring it to me. We'll talk about it in class and see how bad it is. And I went home, sat down, 15, 30 minutes, wrote the short story, threw it in my backpack, took it to school the next day. And as we sort of workshopped it, the consensus was that everyone really seemed to like it. They responded to it. They felt that the characters were compelling. And after the class, when my professor took me aside, she asked me how long I had been writing, and I told her 15 minutes that took me to write the paper. And she just told me, whatever you do for the rest of your life, you should do this. And I was like, if there was ever a sign, like, this probably is it. And so I took every English class under the sun, and it's opened up every single door I've ever wanted to walk through it. Truly, I've enjoyed it. Like, every time anything that has to do with English, I walk in that direction and things just magically work out. So I'm so thankful for her to be like, you should do this. And I'll be like, you're right, I should do this.
Yeah. And so you transferred into UC San Diego as a literature major or an English major?
Yeah, wildly declared. I walked in as a literature major, and that's what my bachelor's degree is in. It's literature and writing.
And while you were here, because transfer students there have a little bit of a different experience because you're at UC San Diego for roughly about 2 years or so. Do you recall any professors that you found were inspiring or that became mentors for you?
Yeah, so one of my first professors, his name was John Granger, originally from Canada, but was teaching at UCSD for some time, and now I believe he's in New York City, living his best life. And his focus, at least at the time when I was with him, was a lot of travel writing. It was a lot of nonfiction based courses, and so he was very preoccupied with kind of presenting everything as it is, as opposed to editorializing or taking these sort of like grand master strokes and maybe taking certain liberties. And I think he had this very grounded approach in the way that people should write, which is it kind of leans in the direction of honesty, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's ugly in a sense. And my other professor, Mel Freilacher, I think he's the great, like he's the bee's knees. He's the best thing that ever happened. And he's wildly concerned with just the reality, almost the brutality of choosing writing as a sort of pathway because it's so incredibly difficult. And it's not at all for the faint of heart, or if you have any type of sentimentality towards rejection, if it weighs on you. There is this kind of mutual understanding, at least that he would foster with his students, that if there was anything else you could possibly do, please go do anything else. Because you really, in the same way that I think a lot of people want to desperately be lawyers because they want to help people, or they desperately want to be in the medical field because they know that they have a deep belief that they can actually help bring people closer to their best health. It's that same scenario where you are kind of making a promise to yourself and to your readership that you're going to present the most honest, truthful representation of whatever it is you're working on. And I think it's that brutal honesty that I definitely just I take with me everywhere I go, and I throw it at people as often as I can.
So let's talk about you're now a professor and you're teaching in higher education in Texas, correct?
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about, why did you decide to become a professor? And maybe you can share a little bit about that with our listeners.
Sure. I am wildly concerned with the illiteracy rate in the United States. I think it keeps me up at night, and it's so important. I don't. As a sort of recovering black sheep, which will probably take me the rest of my life, I don't think I genuinely understood how important education was during like the younger, more formative parts of my education. And then even now, I think I learn something every single day, either from my students or from my peers, about just how important it is. And the comprehension rate, the literacy rate, it's so wildly important because it is the determining factor on whether or not you have control and agency over your life. If you can't read or write, or if you struggle with those faculties, it affects everything. It bleeds into everything. I wouldn't want to send future nurses or lawyers or engineers into a workforce where they're unable to either comprehend what's written down in front of them, or they wouldn't be able to accurately express what it is that they're thinking. Because I think so much of the reading and writing thing connects directly into critical thinking, and that critical thinking directs connectly into their ability to communicate. And if any one of those faculties are off by even a degree, it's going to affect everything all the way down the line. And that is not at all the world that I want to live in. So out of sort of desperation, I sprinted in the direction of teaching because I just figured if I could get into the classroom, then I could show people how easy it is, or how easy it should be. Because for me, and again, maybe this has a lot to do with my athletics background, I don't necessarily consider myself to be particularly exceptional. I think the early sort of discipline of repetition and reading constantly and writing constantly is what allowed me to grow those faculties to the degree that they're at. And I think that's really the key to everything. Education should be geared to present students with the skill sets they need while additionally giving them the time required to practice and develop those skill sets. So that way, when they leave the academic sphere, they're able to utilize them every single day. And so I just am really concerned with preparing people for their everyday life, because I would not want to send anybody out into the world ill-equipped, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense. And thank you for sharing that. The thing that I think is important too is that there aren't a whole lot of Latino literature professors in general. So you're probably a small part of a small percentage.
Yeah. Talk about learning things, right? Just found this out maybe 6 months ago. I was like, oh, whoops, accidentally, like a unicorn. Maybe should have thought about that before.
Yeah, and it's great. And I'm glad you're here talking about your story, because hopefully it will inspire more young people to pursue their passion if they're into writing and reading. And the thing that I want to get a little bit at is, how has your relationship with creative writing shifted over time? Like going from writing for yourself to really writing and creating stories that you want to share with the public.
I think there's something to be said, I think, about being young and brash and a little bit egotistical and then driven by this sort of need to prove yourself. Again, blame it on the athletics. This idea of like, you have to be the best. If you're not number one, you know, you have to go back and like bleed for whatever it takes to make yourself the best. And I think that was the approach I was definitely taking for the first 4 to 5 years while I was at community college, while I was at Grossmont Community College, while I was at UCSD. It just felt like, I don't think there was enough space on my shoulders to fit enough chips for me to carry. It's not possible. I just had something to prove. And then I think right at the very end of that, as I was contemplating going into graduate school, I kind of started realizing that my willingness or my want to try to prove something was misdirected. And starting to ask myself, it's like, well, who am I trying to prove what to, became an incredibly haunting question. And I think from that point, I just pivoted and I was more concerned with just trying to be honest and not necessarily put on a show or put off fireworks for somebody in the work that I was writing. It's just try to capture something that's honest and true and hopefully share that and get someone else to either maybe feel significantly less alone. Because I think for myself, there was this sort of sensation of isolation from everything that I had experienced growing up. And when I would have conversations with my friends, they're like, oh, so you've never been grounded for like 2 years straight? Like you've never shown up to class and done nothing? You've never done all these things? Like, no, that's weird. Like, that's very strange. But I think I realized just because my immediate kind of bubble of people didn't necessarily share those experiences statistically, it didn't mean that other people weren't going through the same thing. And so my pivoting from like, oh, I need to prove something to myself or the people around me shifted more to, oh, I'm kind of carrying around these certain experiences. I know there's other people who probably have those shared experiences. Would be nice to let them know that they're not alone the way that I felt like I was alone. So it's more kind of, I don't know, throwing life rafts in different directions and hoping they hit. And if someone's kind of just treading water, gives them something to hang on to and stay afloat.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing, I love literature and I love writing. So when I met you, I just thought, oh, this is pretty cool. I feel that the interesting thing is that everyone inside them has a story to tell, but we don't really encourage that part of young people. You know, like their story is worth telling, their story is worth hearing. And so I want to talk a little bit about your first short story, Their Daughter Fortuna. And I kind of want to talk a little bit about how did that story come into fruition? And did you need something to like express? Was it a cathartic experience for you? How did that shape?
So So, kind of address your comment about young people and them not being able to express themselves. That's wildly appropriate because when I left UCSD, I'm in my early 20s. I apply to San Diego State for their creative writing program and I get in and I'm 23. Is that right? 22? 22 years old. And I'm the youngest, if not the youngest, second youngest person in the program, and everyone there pursuing their MFA, wildly decorated, multiple masters, a couple PhDs, publications. I have nothing. And the consensus is that it feels like I shouldn't be there because that is the sort of treatment. It's like, oh, you're young, you haven't lived life yet, you haven't lived much of your life. What could you possibly have to say? And apparently a lot, right? I have apparently a lot to say. But the story that I wrote, the goal was to try to process or hash out these sort of strange dynamics that we have, specifically with like parents and their children, specific expectations about what we want, like our dreams and hopes for our children, the type of pressure that puts on those children, and the way in which those children are kind of molded by those pressures and expectations. And the story itself specifically has to do with this sort of physical abuse that their daughter takes on, but it's all motivated from this point of view of, well, we don't want you to come out wrong. We don't want you to stray from the path. We're going to force you as closely as we can down this funnel so that you don't take a wrong trajectory while simultaneously stifling whatever natural growth their daughter was going to take to begin with. And it really is kind of me trying to figure out what good intentions ultimately end up doing despite our best hopes and interests, especially in that dynamic. I think a lot about my relationship with my parents, specifically my father, and I know that the way that I was raised back then, it makes me smile because it would be so wild to even talk about it now because you get canceled immediately. It's just like, oh, this is very sort of old-fashioned kind of like spare the rod, spoil the child type beliefs. And I don't know if I necessarily personally have a problem with the way it played out because in a sense, my father, who I realize now is in his like late 20s, early 30s, gets married, has a kid, should not, you're nowhere near prepared to be a parent, is now a parent and is trying to figure it out as I'm doing the things that I'm doing. And then here I am, 30 years later, I'm a parent, I have children. Nobody should allow me to have done this. Like, this is wild. I'm stressing constantly and I'm trying my best, no different than he was trying his best. And he was just limited in the ways, in the toolset that he had. I have so much more that I can draw on in terms of like how to help my children. He had even less. His father had even less. And it's this sort of generational issue where you're trying your best and what you produce is what you can. This is the 100% effort. And that's kind of like the crux of the story, sort of like how are these things, how do these intentions play out over time and what their implications are.
I appreciate what you're saying because I think a lot of times we don't realize we're critical of how our parents raise us in the moment that they're raising us, but then sometimes we look back on it and we're like, you know, there's some good in that. Like you talked about the good intentions, right? So in your short story, your main character, Fortuna, she winds up becoming a physician, right? So they had their intentions to steer her clear of the trouble that she might have perhaps pursued. And at the same time, there was a sacrifice with the relationship with her parent, right? The type of relationship that she, in many ways, I think, wish she would have had. What's interesting is the neighbor. Like he's an observer of all of this, and he's like a neutral observer, but also not a neutral observer, because there's parts of him that have neutrality, but parts of him that don't, when I read the short story. So I enjoyed reading it. And The other thing is that it's a Latino story. You know, we had an author come and speak for Cesar Chavez recently, and she shared some statistics about how many Latino authors are out there that get published. And it's a very, very, very small percentage.
Yeah.
You know, so I know you're working on your book, and I hope that, you know, when you get it published, we can have you to UC San Diego, and we can promote you here back at your alma mater.
Yeah, no, there's definitely something to be said, at least for myself, about trying to do impossible / hard things. Like, I'm aware of the statistics, and to me, it's just like, oh, that sounds like fun. So I'll do it.
That's how you're wired. You can't help
it. Yeah, I wish it was different. I really wish it was different. Anything that's really hard or, oh, goodness, don't even tell me I can't do something or tell me it's impossible. But again, some of that early childhood upbringing, my dad being like, oh, I don't think you're smart enough to pass that class, eh?
Yeah. He was using the reverse psychology parent manual.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really curious, like, you went on to get your master's, and when did you make that decision? Was that as you were an undergraduate? Did one of your professors suggest that to you? How did that happen?
So it was that last semester at UCSD. I walk into Professor Freilacher's office, and I tell him, what do I do? Like, I got accepted here magically. I've run the gauntlet of all the English classes that I could. In a sense, it felt like I shouldn't have been there to begin with. So the fact that I was there, it's like, you better leave an impression of some kind, like, do great, right? Go big or go home, so to speak. And then now that I had reached the end, I was like, okay, well, like, what's the next big thing that I'm supposed to do? And I sat down and spoke with him, and he said, well, you could do an MFA. You could try to pursue an MFA if you're taking the creative writing thing seriously. But then he also said, don't do that. He's like, I'm going to tell you to do it, because at the end of the MFA, you'll receive your master's and you'll be able to teach. And if you like teaching and if you're good at teaching, you'll be able to enjoy that section of your life. But at the very least, you won't be homeless. And I said, that's fantastic advice. And I said, so should I do it? And he said, I don't think you should do it, because his belief was that if you want to be a writer, going to school for 3 years, what it does is it allows you time to work on your craft. But whether you're doing it there at the institution or whether you're living your life, so long as you're still writing, there's not going to be that much of a separation, except for one will end you with a credential that enables you to teach at a higher institution of education, and the other one will ultimately, like, what everyone's working towards, either their poetry collection or their novel. And I think that he sensed there was this sort of, like, hybridization with teaching and, like, my interests, and in addition to the writing. And so he said, you should probably go do the MFA thing. I think you would do well. And I asked him for a letter of recommendation. He said, absolutely not. He's like, you'll carve your own path. And I said, okay, let's do it. And I applied, and I got in, and it gave me all the time that I needed to work on just a vast variety of short stories, my novel. And I got a chance to do some tutorship. I got a chance to run I was given opportunities to help the student body back some of the undergraduates that I really, really liked. And I felt like I could do more. And so from that point, I was like, we're going to try to do both. One's hard enough, not hard enough. We're going to try to do both impossible things. So I went down the teaching path in addition to the writing.
And is there something that you're working on right now as you're in your writing?
I've been working on this short story since February 16th. This is a piece of science fiction, which is just like a test run, because I feel within the discipline, the genres, I guess, as most people like to refer to them as, so fantasy and science fiction, they kind of get knocked on a little bit to be seen as a significantly less literary, which I feel like in reality, they're almost like the very tip of, like, the literary spear, which is to say, like, the way that they're addressing current events, what they perceive to be problems in the future, specifically in science fiction, it always comes to pass. And that's how some short stories end up becoming incredibly wildly famous 20 years later because of their predictive nature. And so for me, I've always been very cautious because I feel like that's that last little step of mastery where it's like, I don't want to dabble with something and then do it incompetently. I want to take my time with it. So I've been scratching my head over this like short story that I've been working on. And aside from just the smaller things that kind of grasp my attention, I have this longer form novel that I've been working on since 2013. And I've been on chapter 9 of 10. 20 pages in, and I'm close to finishing. But I say I've been close to finishing for the last like 3 years. So hopefully this summer, every year this summer, I say this is the summer I'm going to do it. But I think this one's legit. This time I'm going to do it because I've been finishing a lot of things. So just trying to stay focused.
That's awesome. So if there are some aspiring young writers out there, what type of advice would you give them? What consejos would you offer up?
Be incredibly defiant. I think there is a, if there ever was a moment in history, both within the literary context or social context, if there was ever a time to be politically correct or take people's feelings or sensitivities into consideration at the risk of being honest, I think that time is past. I think I would encourage writers to be as brutally open as they can be about themselves, about how they feel about the world around them, about the society that we live in. Anything that gets you closer to what an objective truth is, the better off you'll be, regardless of where that happens to be. But if we want to keep the bar low, right, we start with ourselves. I think as honest as you can be with yourself and as honestly as you can present yourself to, I don't know, strangers who read your writing, the bigger and the longer lasting impact you'll leave on that person. I think if you show a little fragment of humanity to somebody, a little bit of their humanity will resonate back. And I think that's the important thing.
That's really lovely. I like that. Last thing before we sign off, any books you want to recommend to folks that are listening?
The list is long. I think, oh my goodness, where do we start? I want to say, well, my defaults immediately, anytime somebody asks me, I always start with Margaret Atwood. I think she's a legitimate fortune teller. She's phenomenal in everything that she writes, all of her short stories. She's a hybrid, all of her poems, specifically her novels. If you get the opportunity, top of the list, you have to read Handmaid's Tale. Wildly important. Right after that, Oryx and Crake. Wildly important. You have to read that as well. Beyond that, I would say maybe the lower commitments, find as many short stories as you can from a variety of authors, and as quickly as you can, try to find short stories outside of the United States. Try to figure out what the rest of the world is writing, try to figure out what other people are going through, kind of come to the conclusion that we're not alone, that the problems are kind of universal. But as wide as you possibly can cast the net, is specifically with short stories, cast it. And I can't think of any off the top of my head right now, but that's what I do. I try to find short stories that no one's ever heard of before, from wildly different countries, from wildly different perspectives, just to see what they're doing on a technical level and what kind of stories they're working on.
Okay. Two last questions. The first one is, what advice would you give to your 10-year-old self?
Close your eyes, hold your breath. It's going to be okay. It's okay. It's okay to be weird. It's okay to be different. I spent a lot of time, like I spent a majority of my time hiding in libraries. I spent a majority of my time drawing a lot, which is what got me in trouble because I was in class, should be taking notes, not taking notes, drawing pictures. But those things are okay. It's okay to learn things differently. You don't have to kind of take the conventional route through those sort of like learning moments. I think everyone's going to learn differently. If I look back, I have a pretty good collection of what I have in terms of my notebooks from even those times. And yeah, not a single word is written down, but you better believe there's a picture of like Teddy Roosevelt in the corner, like giving a speech. And it's just like, I was just interpreting things differently. Like the frequency I was on was just a little bit off. And it doesn't mean that I wasn't learning, because like my retention was very, very high. I just would remember things by processing them differently. So it's super okay. They're like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine, 10-year-old self. You'll be okay. It's going to work out.
Yeah, things do work out. And then any advice you'd give to incoming students at UC San Diego?
Oh my goodness. Do everything. Make friends with everyone. Walk into random rooms. Introduce yourself. Everything. I think that's my one regret, was that I definitely have the library memorized inside and out, and I will forever carry it with me in like the piggy bank right here. But I would have loved to have been more involved with other, and there is a push, right? Like there is a push specifically within the colleges to step outside of your discipline. I was taking a bunch of the mental health and psychology classes. There's always that wonderful encouragement to take classes outside of your discipline. But I think beyond the classroom, that also needs to be a thing where it's like, you just go and sign up for clubs, go and sign up for anything that has to do with everything outside of your one specific little sliver of focus, because you're just going to benefit so much from it. So as much as you can, be incredibly obnoxious and annoying and be friendly and go out and make friends with everybody and sign up for everything and just be wildly experimental with the things that you're choosing to kind of learn from, because it does take its own role. It comes into play at some point or another. I'm constantly talking to my students in class about writing their essays, and immediately a departure into economics, immediately and a departure into advertising, and why that plays so deeply into what we're writing, how words are being used in each and every single discipline. And I think your ability to kind of access those different waypoints helps you to, one, kind of stay a little bit dynamic in terms of the way we're thinking, but two, application. You have a wider range of application if you have more sources to pull from. That's my advice.
Eduardo, thank you. Thank you for your time and for being with us today.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.